everybody. Welcome to episode number 205 of the SoxProspects.com podcast. We are the web's number one source for information on the Boston Red Sox farm system from top to bottom, from Fort Myers to Worcester and up the pike to Fenway and all stops in between. Thank you for listening. My name is Chris Hatfield and I am the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I am joined as always by our director of scouting, a man who has an upward mobility clause in his contract straight into your hearts, Ian Cundall. Ian, what's the good word, man?
Yeah, hanging in. We're heading towards baseball season, which is fun. I'm kind of over spring training, if I'm honest.
It's less fun when we should be there right now, is the problem. Well, we've been sharing.
There's no minor league.
Go ahead. There's no
minor league camp going on, which is like half the fun of 95% of the fun of spring training. And like, I don't know. It's just, I'm just kind of, you can only watch so many spring training games, I think. And
right.
I've watched a lot.
Yeah.
I just think that it's time to move on to the regular season. You know, we've reached that point of camp where injuries are starting to happen, like stupid injuries, like guys trying to rob home runs in spring training, hurting their shoulders.
Eloy.
And $340 million contract guys getting hurt on routine ground balls. And it's just like, let's get to the regular season. So, yeah.
Pitchers getting hurt hitting. Universal DH now.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the regular season, but there's still some stuff to talk about, which is fun.
There is. Yeah, I mean, we're a little disappointed because we should be down there right about now. You, me, and Mike have been trading the kind of photos from camp and from Blue/Brahma Sushi and, you know, the year we won a giant inflatable alien at the arcade and all that good stuff. But, yeah, we miss being down there. But we're almost towards the regular season, and baseball is almost here. It feels like last year was a bad dream. It's just a weird sort of like half season that the team was terrible, and I don't know. Hope springs eternal, I think, is what I'm trying to say. But thank you all for listening, of course. We're going to talk about kind of the latest news from camp, which is going to be maybe a little more Major League focused than we typically get, but that's what we have to talk about right now because that's what's going on. And, of course, we're going to get to your emails. As always, you can send your emails to podcast@soxprospects.com. We want to talk about what you all want to hear about, and you all came through again with some terrific emails this week. We're going to get to those. We're going to talk about all kinds of things related to the pitching, the hitting, the major leagues, alternate training site, what's going to happen in minor league camp. We do have a little bit of kind of new stuff on how minor league camp's going to proceed. I just came to mind, Ian. But of course, we also want to give a shout-out to our supporters on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/SoxProspects and support the podcast, support the website, pledge an amount per episode, and we really appreciate everyone who's supporting us on there. But as always, we want to give a special shout-out to our $5 level Patreon supporters. That ever-growing list includes Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Traynor, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall, Evan Kirkwood, Hurricanes 1, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, David B., Ben Burnett, Al Mendel, Kevin Catrides, Ben and R.I., Paul Denyer, Lendl Martin, Cassandra Buchta, James P. McMahon, Stephen Gregory, James Bailey, Andreas Golstrand, Corey Perrick, Forrest Perkins, Mark Herman, Aaron Mehta, Jeff Harwood, Jimmy Mountain, Brian Cowan, and Dusty G. Thank you all for your support. We, as always, appreciate you. Ian, let's get right into it. There's 1 week left before the Major League season starts. Not a whole lot of drama in terms of the lineup. Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little batting order. Questions, though, it seems like Alex Cora more or less knows what he's doing there. And there actually might be one kind of interesting thing to talk about there that our listeners might be interested in. We know the rotation. We could talk about the pitching depth, the bullpen. There's a lot going on. Let's maybe start, Ian, on the pitching side. Not a lot to talk about with the Major League rotation. It's exactly the five guys we thought it would be in the order we thought they would be.
Yes.
Eduardo Rodriguez gets the opening day start. Going to be followed by Nathan Eovaldi, Garrett Richards, Martin Perez, and Nick Pivetta.
Yep.
Not a lot has happened since the last episode in terms of, you know, transaction-y type stuff. There were a lot of guys optioned or reassigned to the minor leagues. Again, no one surprising too much, but, you know, one of the guys was Tanner Houck, who I think for you and I, it wasn't surprising that he didn't break camp with the team. But a lot of people, you know, inside the game, outside the game. This isn't just like a, oh, you know, silly, just kind of, you know, part-time fan who doesn't really get how baseball works thing. This is people who are within the game who, when I said next year Tanner Houck should start in Worcester when he was tearing things up at the end of the year last year, were like, why do you not think he would be up? And this is kind of why. He wasn't yet the pitcher that he was showing as in those three starts in a weird season with, you know, players not really being familiar with him. He looked great. It was a good thing that he came up and did that. But to me, I don't see the problem with having Tanner Houck as potentially the next guy up. And Tanner Houck was optioned to the minor leagues as part of Pivetta clearly winning that fifth spot. And he's also looked pretty good, frankly.
Yeah, he's been impressive. I mean, I think a lot of their pitchers have done a pretty good job this spring.
Mm-hmm. Nobody looks a mess.
No, I mean, if you wanted to make a case, the person who struggled the most is probably Houck, except for until, what was this, his last start, I think, was finally
I thought
decent.
His second one was the good one, but I think he was kind of wild in two of the three starts, is what I recall. That may
or
not
even
true.
Starts, appearances. It was the second. It was the first and the third one were bad.
He was pretty wild. Yeah. And that's him. I mean, that's been his issue.
Well, that was the thing, is like, we talked about how good he was last year, and he was excellent, but it still came, and I think his walk per nine, his BB9 was still like 5.5 or something. So he still was having trouble locating, and he just was able to get guys out because, you know, he's got good stuff still. He's got those two pitches that are really good. But, you know, once the book gets out on a guy like that, people are just going to lay off the slider. They're going to sit, hunt fastballs, and he's going to have to throw quality strikes. And at this point in his development, he's just not that type of pitcher. And that's why I was always of the opinion that they would not be comfortable going into the season with him in their rotation. And obviously by the moves they made, they agreed with that. And it's kind of reached a point where I'm not sure that if they needed a starter, I think that they would look at someone like Matt Andrees first, probably.
Of course. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. We started talking about this earlier and I said, let's save it. That's what I was going to say.
I think that it's pretty clear that they're dividing their bullpen into kind of like two, like there's like three groups. There's like the late inning guys, and you have the middle relievers, and then you have your bulk spot starters. Mm-hmm. And it seems they view Matt Andrees and Garrett Whitlock, who we should talk about because he's probably been the best pitcher
in camp. Yep.
Those two guys are clearly the like bulk guys, and I think they it's pretty clear they're stretching both of them out, and it makes sense. I mean, this schedule is weird. Guys innings are not up to what they should be coming from the previous season. They're gonna need a 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th starter this year to get through. And that's even if everything goes super swimmingly, that they're going to need those guys. So if anything goes wrong, like as we saw last season, you know, they're going to rely on that depth, and they need innings, and they need to fill them somehow. And that's why having Andrees and Whitlock in the opening day roster is going to be so important. You know, you need those guys. If a starter has a bad start and has to pull in the third inning, or if, you know, you have a stretch of, what, 6 games in 6 days and someone needs to get pushed back a day or whatever, you know, you need those guys. And so that's why I think it's key that they have them. But I think if you're going down to the minors, I would not be surprised at all if they went with the Connor Siebold route at this point, assuming Houck, because Houck, he had 10 walks in 6 innings. Like, there's things he needs to work on. He still doesn't have confidence in his third pitch. Whereas Siebold just looked like he didn't pitch as much as Houck, but when he did pitch, he just looked like a better pitcher. His stuff has ticked up from last season. Yeah.
How many innings did he get? I know you're looking at it.
Siebold threw one. He's thrown in the B games too, but in his one inning, the B games also, it's been reported. But yeah, his velocity was up when the one inning he did throw in the games. And I just think that he's someone who maybe they'll see how they throw out the ATS, obviously. And I think that will be the ultimate determinator of if they have to dig into the AAA or ATS group for a long guy. But I think that, you know, it's better for the way they're better prepared to handle this season with Houck in the minors. And it's going to be interesting to see who emerges from that group in the future for when they do need an arm at some point in the regular season.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned that earlier and I found it kind of interesting because I've just always assumed Houck is, he's the guy who came up last year and he had that success. But I think it's going to depend on how they look at the alternate site.
Yeah.
How they are pitching. And you know, Siebold is also on the 40. There's no reason they can't bring him up.
Well, and that's also why I think like someone like Colton Brewer we'll probably talk about when we talk about that last bullpen spot, but he's kind of interesting in that spot. I know he hasn't been great in spring training, but he's another guy that can give you bulk innings. Whereas when you look at someone like Phillips Valdez and Kevin McCarthy, who are the other guys that seem seemingly competing for that spot, they're more of like a one inning, maybe two innings at most type of pitcher.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that will factor into it, but just another thing to consider with Brewer can give them some length too.
Yeah, I just, how many of those guys do you need? Because I always kind of come back to that 2018 team. Corey used Brian Johnson and Hector Velasquez so well, right, as spot starters, long guys who also kind of worked in, you know, some kind of regular-ish relief spots.
Yeah, that's true. So
it's just, how many of them do you need, especially when you do have, hey, look, you know, the way I think it's going to wind up working is you've got your five-man rotation. If you've got a stretch of, I don't know how many days they're going to have without an off day this year. But yeah, if you've got 11 with no off day, plan on throwing Andreese on day six.
Or just have Andreese and Whitlock piggyback and each throw like three innings or whatever.
Right. I was going to say is if you find yourself, you know, where one of them, someone like the starter has to leave after two, but the game's close and you wind up wanting to go to Andreese for some reason, then have Whitlock at the start or vice versa. You know, that way you don't feel tied to when you can use either of them. But I don't know that you need a third bulk guy. Even with a 9-man bullpen?
Because they're carrying 14 pitchers.
Yeah, so and maybe that's a good transition into the bullpen.
I would say, yeah, do you want to talk about the bullpen?
So, I mean, there's one question at the back end of, is Matt Barnes or Adam Ottavito going to be the closer? I think that's kind of been who it's been narrowed down to because it's, they've said Sawamura. I think you just break him in the middle innings. Let him get used to the American baseball. Let him get used to American hitters.
His command is not looked up, and control is not looked up to someone who had to be comfortable throwing in a leverage spot at this point in the season.
Yep. So let him build up to that. And both of those guys have experience in late innings. I would be comfortable with either. I don't think it's a big deal. Like everyone's like, oh, who's the closer going to be? And I get that you kind of have to talk about the positions that are still up in the air. I just think, and we were talking about this the other day in the context of fantasy, but like in 2021 in MLB, yes, you want to define roles. I don't think it's a, you want to have defined roles and it must be like that all year.
Yeah.
It's almost more like a batting order than a defensive positioning thing.
Well, exactly. And I think that the better way to do it is just look at that the four guys who I think will be pitching at the end of games is Barnes, Ottavino, Darwinson, and Josh Taylor. I think those are the four like seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys.
Well, let's see how the lefties throw, because they basically didn't have a year like they, Taylor they, barely pitched and Darwin well Darwinson barely pitched and Taylor when he came back wasn't great, but they also kind of get mulligans for having gotten COVID.
Well, exactly. And they were both big, significant like members of the bullpen in 2019. And they've both been pretty good this spring. I mean, Darwinson's walked too many, but that's always, he's going to do that. Like he's going to walk guys.
That's why he's in the bullpen.
He doesn't give up hits. And if you're not giving up hits, you can get away with that a little more. Mm-hmm. But I think they have to have a lefty in there. So maybe one of those two is a better way to describe it.
Yeah.
But I think that it could just be a situation where they don't have a set defined closer. Like Barnes might close 75% of the time, but there might be a situation where, because he's looked dominant this spring too, where you run into, you know, if they're playing the Yankees and they have 2-3-4 up in the eighth inning, maybe you go to Barnes then, and then you throw someone else in the ninth.
Yeah,
because that's the most important inning of the game. But I don't know. I'm interested to see how they do use that, because during Coors' first tenure, they did have a set closer, obviously.
Right, because they had Kimbrel. But though in 19, and Cora has talked about this, he felt that he burned Barnes out by having him face the heart of the other team's order every time he pitched. He just got burned out by facing like 2-3-4 every time out, and that makes some sense, right? Like, I mean, in my day job, which this is probably not the week to talk about it, but in a normal month in which I have not made my hours with like 8 work days left, like, you know, you need a day in which you're not like on, right? You need a day in which you're just like, you know, cleaning up your inbox and dealing with this other little piddly matter and whatever, you know.
Maintenance day.
You need maintenance days. And, you know, when you're a late inning reliever, sometimes you need a day where you come in, you're up 10 runs and you're facing 7, 8, 9. Go work out, you know, go air it out, you know, don't worry about if you miss, you're going to give up a home run and your ERA is going to balloon and you're not going to get paid next year, right? Like, I mean, look at what happened to Ottavino when he had two bad games last year. His numbers look terrible. So, granted, in a small sample size. But, yeah, that seems like the back end. The other thing is, of course, Ryan Brazier looks like he's certainly not going to, I mean, he hasn't even pitched in a game yet, so he's going to start.
No, there's no way he's starting.
He's going to start on the IL. It's kind of funny with him because they said he hadn't been there with a personal issue, and then a little while later, when it became clear he wasn't going to be ready for the start of the year, all of a sudden we heard about this finger injury he had in the offseason.
Yeah, he hurt his thumb or something, right?
But it's also better now. Like, they clearly started talking about it when it's like, oh, yeah, he's going to need to go on the IL.
Yeah,
finger injury.
Yeah. Well, because I think they can't, if he just had to, like, stay, they can't just put him on the IL, right, if he was late to report to camp and wasn't ready
if
to go.
Late to report to camp, right? Had to deal with a personal issue. No, I don't think you can. I mean, you could put him on, like, TIA probably.
Right.
But then
I
like, doesn't
he can...
get paid.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, yeah. So I think he probably misses, like, a week or two. But
yeah,
that leaves, you know, in those middle-ish inning roles, you have one of the lefties, you have Austin Bryce, you have Sawamura, and then you go down to the question mark, I think, which is who takes that Brazier spot. And I think we agree it's – I mean, it is based on who's left in camp, it's down to three people, most likely.
We could say the guy's left in camp. I mean, the guy's left in camp for the spot. I mean, it's been reported as two spots. They're not
Bryce
going to DFA Austin Bryce.
Yeah.
Like, that's the – I mean, it's not that he's – a future closer, but like you're not going to cost yourself depth, and this is, we're going to get into this more with the thing we're about to talk about, but Bryce is in, and so it comes down to Colton Brewer, Phillips Valdez, Kevin McCarthy, and Marcus Walden. The first two are on the 40, the last two are not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it's going to come down to keeping that depth, to me. I think we all kind of for a while thought, oh well, Valdez looked pretty good last year.
Yeah.
He has, you made the comment, and I wholeheartedly agree when we were talking on Slack. He's probably pitched his way out of that spot.
Yeah, he's been really bad. And it's talking to scouts who've seen him. It's not good. He's walked 7 6 2/3 innings. He's hit a couple guys, nine runs in that time, couple of home runs, I think, or a home run. He's striking guys out, but just his control has just eluded him. And you can't have a guy in that, you know, that middle relief role can't throw strikes. That's just a recipe for disaster. And, you know, with him struggling, it's opened the door for other guys. And as you said, Colton Brewer's also not been great. You know, he's 4 1/3 innings, 3 strikeouts, allowed 6 hits, 4 runs. And that's where we get to Kevin McCarthy, who have that trio. I'm taking Walden out of it because I didn't realize this. How many innings do you think Walden has thrown this spring?
He hasn't thrown much. He doesn't throw very much. Yeah,
like, I just don't think he's a consideration based on how he's being used.
It's interesting. They've definitely been using guys in B games to hide him.
There
are a few guys who've been throwing a fair amount in the B games, I've heard. So,
but I don't think it's worth adding him because the depth situation where they would have to add him and lose someone else, and they're not forced to add him, whereas they could be with Kevin McCarthy. Do you want to talk about his contract?
Yeah, and so we usually are the ones who report on which minor league free agents have opt-outs in their deals. And this year, there's three of them. We don't have information on Danny Santana's opt-out because he didn't sign until March the 7th. And I think that, you know, my source, it got pulled before the 7th. But the other two guys who have opt-outs are Chris Herrmann and Kevin McCarthy. Chris Herrmann, obviously the catcher, Kevin McCarthy, the reliever who's still kind of in the mix, who's looked very good. Ian, I don't know if you want to kind of mention that really quick, but he's looked pretty solid.
Yeah, he's someone who, just talking to scouts who are at the games down there and following the team, who has really piqued their interest because he just gives a different look. You know, he's a true like sinker ball, ground ball type pitcher who just comes in, throws a ton of strikes, pounds the zone down, keeps it down. And he's missing some bats, even though he's throwing 89 to 91. You know, in 6 innings, he's allowed 4 hits, 2 runs. He hasn't walked anyone, 6 strikeouts. The 2 runs were unearned. I think it was a couple of bad defensive plays let him down, which is going to happen if you're a ground ball guy. But, you know, if you're someone who can throw strikes, you got 2.5, 3 pitches, good changeup. Changeup's usable. Breaking ball's a little behind it, but he's got usable secondaries, and that's the kind of guy you want in the middle innings who can just come in, get that ground ball in a key situation when the starter goes 5 2/3. You know, someone like that is not, they don't really have a guy like that in the pen right now, a true like sinker ball, ground ball type pitcher for the middle relief type, because Salamore is more a strikeout guy, and Austin Bryce is too. So I think he's someone who makes a lot of sense on the team construction. And I would not be surprised if, based on what I'm hearing, if that he is not, you know, at what is whatever added to the 40 man by that date, I would not be surprised at all if another team takes a look at him for their bullpen. Because if you look around the league, there are some pretty bad bullpens out there. I mean,
that's probably a good transition. Probably a good transition. It's so I say opt outs as a general term. I probably should not, because. Let's back up, and this is kind of nuanced baseball. This is not 101. This is like baseball contracts / transactions, you know, 301, 300 level course. McCarthy and Herman on the 28th, which is this coming Sunday, have what's called an upward mobility clause. And that's opposed to a release clause. A release clause is what folks probably think of out there when they're listening, when we say opt out. On this date, if the player is not added, so if you have an opt-out, right, if I have an opt-out for the 26-man roster, if I am not added to the 26th-man roster on this by this date, I can tell the team, add me to the 26-man roster or release me. I'm opting out. You're immediately released. They get to add you.
Yeah, and if they don't, though, they have to release you.
If they don't, then they have to release you. An upward mobility clause... What that means is, so both of them have, for the 28th, an upward mobility clause for the 40-man roster. I'll talk about why in function it doesn't really matter, but for the 40-man roster. So what that means is, if the Red Sox do not add them to the 40-man roster on that date, they need to offer those players to every other major league team. If nobody expresses interest, we move on. Okay, there's no need to add them.
Didn't the Red Sox get someone this way last year? That's what it was. I was just trying to give people like context in a Red Sox world of what it was.
Yep. And it's like what happened. I mean, and this is, I figured out that that's what it probably was, because it never got reported that way, but that's pretty clearly what it was. People were saying like it was a clause in his contract. It was an upward mobility clause, because the Red Sox got him and they had to add him to, I think, the 26-man roster. And then he was on it for opening day, and then they optioned him like 2 days in. So, But with Herman and McCarthy, they have 40-man upward mobility clauses. So say the Red Sox don't add them to the 40, which they probably will not, because they do not need to. But just give me a minute here before we disagree on that, because I think there's two different things in play. If no other major league team, as I said, wants to add them to their 40-man roster, then they just stay right where they are in the minors. If another team expresses interest in that player to add them to their 40-man roster, the Red Sox either need to let the player go to that team or add him themselves. So in other words, they kind of have a right of last refusal or first refusal. I don't know if it would be first refusal. They don't, it's not like waivers where the guy's gone if he gets claimed, right? So that's why there's really not necessarily incentive to add the guy before the upward mobility clause date, because why not see what interest is out there to me, right? If like, to me, why not see if, even if you're going to add Kevin McCarthy to the roster, right? Why not see what interest is out there, so that later in the year, if you need to try and pass him through waivers, you know, oh, like four teams wanted him, he's going to get claimed, right? The thing, then if multiple teams want the player, the team can swing a deal to one of the teams or whatever. Can work out a trade. It's the same thing, though. They either need to add him or let him go. The thing with both of those guys is they're both out of options. So adding them to the 40-man is effectively having to add them to the 26-man. So yeah, why not see what other interest is out there on those players? But with both of them, the issue is, because they don't have options, they need to be added to the 26-man roster if they're added to the 40. And so you find them in the same kind of situation. And this is particularly of interest with McCarthy, because there's no chance Chris Herman is making this team. But with McCarthy, if he makes the team, he's in the same situation as an Austin Bryce, where he doesn't have options. In order to get him back down to the minors, you're going to have to DFA him. So I would argue, if we're talking about the last spot in the nine-man bullpen, right now coming into this year, you've got Franchy Cordero, who, by the way, is on the COVID-19 list and like doesn't count towards the 40-man roster. When he comes back, you have to DFA someone. I think we've all kind of agreed that's going to be John Schreiber, right? That's who it's probably going to be.
Yeah.
If you add McCarthy now, when Brazier comes back, whose spot is he taking? There's no one with, the only one with options, I think, is Josh Taylor. I don't think you're sending Josh Taylor down. Maybe you are if he's not pitching well, but I wouldn't count on it. So are you DFAing Bryce? Are you DFAing? You can't DFA a hitter because now you've got a two-man bench. You're just,
well, no, I think
it depends on how quick Brazier's coming back, I think.
Well, I think it's that, and I also think it's, I mean, that's assuming no one gets hurt in the first 2 weeks.
For sure. For sure.
That's true. Consideration to me is like, I feel like those things kind of just work itself out. Like they something is going to happen.
They can.
Yeah.
They can work themselves out. I mean, it's, and again, like, you know, we always say, like, when we come into the season, we project 27 guys for the 26-man roster because no team enters the year with no one on the IL, right? There's correct. Always yeah. someone on the injured list. So yeah. why, you know, go through consternation of who's going to make the AAA roster when you know, someone's staying up, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, even if McCarthy, to me, if they do add McCarthy, it means they think that Brazier's going to be out for like a month. Because if they expect, if they expect Brazier back within a week or two, just go with Brewer as the ninth guy. Like, it's the ninth guy in the rotation.
But I think the flip side of that, Brewer's the bullpen, out of options. Sorry. I think the flip side of that is, though, is that
Brewer's not Brewer options. Hasn't.
No, Brewer. He has an option left.
Yeah, he has an option.
That, you know, if you're going to DFA like Shriver and let's say who else is out of options that's on the 40 man.
Well, so here's the thing with the 40 man, and I think we've got an email about this, so I don't want to go too far into it. But like, do you move Marcus Wilson in a Yoan Ibar deal where you get another not quite as good prospect who's not on the 40 man?
Well, exactly. Maybe. Yeah, something like that.
Do you move? I don't know. I'm looking at the guys on the 40.
He's really the only one who fits that criteria. Unless you're not going to trade Jake Groom. I don't think he has value that's worth it.
No,
it's really just him.
Yeah, he's the only guy because the rest of the guys you need, they're either depth or, you know, I'm kind of surprised that Edward Bizzardo didn't get a longer look.
Yeah, he would have made some sense. Because he was good too when he was down
there.
The
stuff looked good. I mean, I guess they just want him to kind of consolidate games and gains in AAA first.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think you have, I forgot the Franchy aspect because we were going to get to it with the hitters, but I forgot that they had to add him and that's the Shriver spot.
Yep.
Most likely. So if they want to bring McCarthy, they either have to 60 day someone, and I believe they've 60 day sale already. Yeah, they have.
Yeah. Yep.
So they don't have anyone to 60 day. So unless, I think you're probably right that even if McCarthy pitches significantly better than him, that the only way would be if Brazier is going to be out a significant amount of time, which it doesn't sound like he is. I think the flip side though is if you truly think he outpitched Valdez and Brewer by that much, just DFA one of them.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it? Do you just go ahead and?
But like, do you just say, like, this guy's clearly better than the two options internally we have. We want him around. Let's just DFA one of them. And if they get claimed, great. If not, we still have him. Like, or sorry, if they get claimed, we'll find another guy, just like we got them off waivers. Where if they don't get claimed, great, we still have him. Like, I think that's the consideration.
But the reason why I also say if we're talking a month for Brazier is that is it worth losing Phillips Valdez, who last year – was a useful major league relief pitcher for 2 weeks of Kevin McCarthy as your number nine reliever. You know what I mean? And the thing is, it's not even that. It's like 2 weeks as the number nine reliever, and now you've locked yourself into another major league relief pitcher who does not have options. You know, because that's the other thing is when Brazier comes back, who are you sending down? If Brewer's the guy who's up, sending Brewer down. Right?
Yeah,
and that's what I'm saying. If he's going to be out for a month, Yeah, over the course of a month, it's probably going to work itself out. I don't know that I would rely on it to work itself out over 2 weeks.
So they can't option Salamore, right?
I don't know. I don't think it would go over well.
No, I right? know that, but like...
Yeah, I don't... I haven't seen that reported either way. Maybe I'll try and track that down.
Because that would be the way I would... Because I would personally rather have Kevin McCarthy for now.
But here's the thing is that, like, I want Sawamura getting used to pitching in the major leagues, even if it's in low-leverage innings.
He looked really good today when I watched him.
Yeah.
He threw, I think, an inning and two-thirds, I want to say, of nothing. Or inning and a third, no walks, no hits, no hit-by-pitches, nothing, just two strikeouts. And slider looked good. You know, that's the thing, talking to scouts, just he has no fastball command right now. His slider, he can actually throw for strikes, but you got to be able to locate your fastball.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, his stuff is significantly better than any of the other guys we're talking about. So, yeah, you probably let him work it out. But,
yeah,
it's like a complicated issue, though, just because I do think Kevin McCarthy has looked the best of those three, and I'm not sure it's that close.
Right.
But this is where, like, not all – like players are created equal in the sense of their contracts have a huge implication of on like contract can outweigh performance in a situation like this contract status.
And then maybe this is, you know, transitioning maybe over to the hitter side. That's why we've said for a couple months now, I think the way that Michael Chavis makes this roster, if they have health, is he has to significantly outplay Christian Arroyo, which he hasn't, but you know, of course he's probably going to make
them very good.
He's been good. It's just
Arroyo has been very good too,
right? And it's got to be like, because you don't want to make decisions based on spring training statistics, right?
No,
you make it based on, but maybe there you weigh how a guy has looked, like hey, Phillips Valdez is not ready to get major league hitters out right now, let's use Brewer instead, right? But that's, and it's the same thing with the bullpen, is that like, hey, Kevin McCarthy has been better, no question. Do we know if that's going to continue? Don't know. I have no idea. So is it worth potentially losing a guy who might be better in the long run, even if it's on the fringes of the roster? Maybe it is. I think McCarthy has pitched better enough than them that he has made it a question.
Well, to play devil's advocate, McCarthy's innings are usually coming later in the game when he's facing like double and triple A's for the most part. You know, he's not exactly facing, I don't believe, like the better, like the starting lineups of teams.
Baseball Reference has a metric that talks about the quality of players they've faced in spring training.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. That's a good thing to have.
Well, anyway, in the meantime, why don't we transition over to the offensive side of the ball while I pull up those numbers, Ian, because my computer is going extremely slow.
I have his stats. What am I looking for?
On BREF?
Yeah, I have opponent quality.
Yeah.
6.4. No idea what that means.
That's not very high. I mean, so the context would be to look at the full
6.4
team.
Is like in between high A and double A, according to their charts.
Right, right, right. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, I what I really am trying to find is the team spring training statistics.
Gotcha.
But anyway.
But here, I have them. For the Red Sox?
Yes. Opponent quality for like Brewer versus, you know, whoever.
I don't have, I thought you meant something different.
No. Yeah. Well, whatever. Let's move on to the hitters. We can double back. So looking at this is funny. The Baseball Reference lists Brian O'Halloran as the GM, which he is for the Red Sox, but it like doesn't list Bloom, which is kind of funny. Oh, here we go. I got it right now. So right-handed relief pitchers. Phillips Valdez is a 6.6. McCarthy's at 6.4. I could guess I could just sort by this. Yeah, so like Caleb Ort actually is at an 8.2, which is the highest among the right-handed relievers.
Well, that's because he keeps coming in like the third or fourth inning after a starter, face, and he's
which
still
is like a triple A level. But like Austin Bryce is at a 7.1. Marcus Walden is at a 7.1. That's like double A. Colton Brewer 7.0. So, you know, it's relative, you know, where you know, McCarthy is facing worse hitters of that group than, you know, Bryce or Brewer or Walden or Valdez just by a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. We'll see what they do. Again, as much as we may discuss it and have much hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth right now, it's not going to matter all that much because it's going to change 2 weeks in. It's going to change 3 weeks in. Like, it'll move around. So we'll have to just wait and see what happens with what they decide here. I'm sure that they'll kind of be watching what guys do this last week. Maybe not make the decision based upon it, but, you know, change our minds.
I think this is a situation where it's going to come down to this last, you know, how the guys perform the next week plus whatever is left of spring training will be, as you said, important.
Mm-hmm. On the hitter side, Ian, Franchi Cordero being out, it looks like Marwin Gonzalez is more or less going to be your starting left fielder or your regular left fielder.
Yeah.
Remains to be seen how much mix and match and moving guys around Alex Cora is going to do with Kike Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez. And, you know, it looks like Gonzalez is, for example, also the backup first baseman when they mm-hmm. face maybe a tough lefty. So, you know, is Kike
tough righty, you mean?
Or tough righty. Sorry. Yeah, right. Dalbec's a left. Dalbec hits lefty. Yeah, Dalbec hits left. Right?
No, yes. Dalbec hits righty. Yeah.
So you would be sitting Dalbec against a tough righty. Got it.
Righty.
Don't mind me. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sorry. Anywho, brain is not working. I've had 5 hours of sleep the last 2 nights. The lineup is set. Otherwise, you're going Vasquez, Dalbec, probably Kike Hernandez for the most part at the Keystone, Bogarts and Devers, and then two of your outfielders are going to be Alex Verdugo and Hunter Renfroe, and, you know, some combination of Gonzalez and Hernandez. And then it looks like the bench is going to include Christian Arroyo and Michael Chavis.
To start. But Cordero looks like he might be ready. They didn't rule it out today.
They haven't ruled it out, and he's getting into it. I think it's just with his injury history, I wouldn't want to rush him for that first week.
Yes, because he's looked good. I mean, he has like 7 at-bats, but he hasn't struck out yet, you know, which is obviously the big problem with him in the past has been he's hitting the ball hard, and, you know, he's a physical guy, so I'm definitely intrigued to see what he can do in a full season if he can stay healthy, kind of a worth of at-bats.
Yeah.
But, I think for now, I think we can say that both Arroyo and Chavis will make the opening day roster.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question.
I know Chavis has been good this spring, and he's hit 6 home runs. He still struck out 15 times in 49 at-bats or plate appearances.
Yeah.
So his strikeout rate's over 30% still. He has 2 walks. He still gets beat by the same pitches. Like, I understand the power is there, but isn't this kind of what we know he can do and what we've seen him do at the major league level before? Like, he can hit home runs against mistake pitches, but he still can't hit the same, you know, he still has the same holes in his swing.
Well, it's the same question we always have with Bobby Dalbec, which is the thing that I was going to mention, is it looks like Cora has more or less a sense of what the lineup will be. Kike Hernandez is going to lead off, followed by Alex Verdugo, some combination of JD Martinez and Xander Bogarts, with Rafael Devers in the 5 hole. Vasquez probably hitting 7th, so that moves Renfroe up to 6, you know, maybe that moves around, maybe that, you know, is Marwin Gonzalez on a given day. And the number 9 hitter is going to be Bobby Dalbec, who has hit how many home runs now? 6 himself.
Yeah.
With both of them, it's how sustainable is that offensive output striking out as much as they are? Because Dahlbeck's got 16 Ks, I think, at least as of the Baseball Reference doesn't have today's game. But
yeah,
Dahlbeck's striking out a ton too.
Yeah, and it was funny. I was talking to a scout about him and like what he's seeing, and he's like, I don't think I've ever said this before, but I wouldn't rule out a 300 strikeout 40 home run season. It's like I like thought about it for a second, and I was like, oh my god. But then I looked at it like, and I was like, yeah. I don't think it's likely, but
would you be surprised if Bobby Dalbec has a 50 home run season in him?
No,
I wouldn't at all.
But.
Would you be surprised if Bobby Dalbec hits 150, strikes out in 40% of his at-bats, and gets sent to the minors?
No. That's like his range of outcomes is so wide. Like, I mean, even if you look at last season, didn't he have like a 45% strikeout rate?
Yeah, it was like 43, like, I want to say. I think it was 43 like, because it matched what he did in Greenville.
It was 42.4%. And
yeah, okay.
Like,
that was close.
If you project it out, if he gets a full season worth of plate appearances, like close to 700... it's not out of the question, because if he's getting, you know, if he's hitting 40 home runs, you're going to throw him out there. Like,
the thing that people don't get is that like for him to strike out that much and be a productive offensive player, he would be a unicorn. It's not mathematically impossible, right?
No.
It's mathematically possible to be a productive hitter and strike out that much. It's just that that would mean when he makes contact and puts the ball in play, he is doing it with such authority that it's just almost always quality contact.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you let's say he gets 650 PAs, that would be he would have to do he would have to strike out in like 46%, which is only a little higher than what he did last year.
It's 42.4. Yeah.
Yeah, it's at 300 strikeouts, sorry, would be like a 46% K rate for 650 PAs. Like, it's not out of the question, which is crazy to say.
Right.
And it's just I don't know what you think about, we haven't talked about this, what you think about hitting him ninth, but I actually think it's kind of genius. And here's why: is hitting ninth, the opposing pitcher is not going to want to put him on base to start it. Like when you're turning around the border, because you know what they say: you never want to walk the ninth hitter.
Yeah.
Dahlbeck is someone who, for all the strike swing and miss yes in his game, he will take a walk. If the pitchers don't throw him strikes, he's not going to swing.
Right.
And basically, I think what Cora's trying to do is put him in a position where pitchers will have to throw him strikes and can't just like bury him with sliders away. Basically.
Yeah.
Like,
with the pressure off because he's hitting ninth.
Exactly. There's no pressure on him to be like the run producer number six hitter. But at the same time, he's going to get more fastballs most likely because the nine, that's what you do with the nine hitter. Pitchers want a quick turnover of the nine hitter. They want to get them out quickly. And there aren't very many nine hitters like him in baseball. And if you're throwing him out there and then you have, you know, Kike Hernandez, I think, who'd you say, who's hitting second? Verdugo. You have the top of the order coming up. You don't want him on base if you're a pitcher. So you're going to throw him strikes. And I think that's what they're trying to do is take the pressure off, but at the same time, put him in a situation where he'll see more strikes than he might. Because if he's hitting sixth or seventh and he's coming up with like a guy on second and third, or they can pitch around him a little bit because they know there's weaker hitters after him. Whereas in this situation, they're going right back to the top of the lineup after. And that's what I want, which was why I was, when I look at it, I was like, why is Renfro hitting sixth and he's hitting ninth? But that was kind of the calculus or the reasoning I came up with in my head that it seemed to make sense.
It reminds me of, I remember while I was in college, the baseball team's best power hitter was hitting leadoff.
Yeah.
And I remember asking the coach about it, being like, why are you hitting leadoff? And he's like, he can only hit fastballs. So I hit him leadoff so he gets fastballs. Because if I hit him third, he's going to get breaking balls and he's going to stink. And it's like,
yeah,
all right, cool. I'm on board. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I like your theory a lot. I really like
it. It's the only thing that could make sense. Cause like, I think him and Renfro are similar profiles, but I think that, Dahlbeck, they're clearly more invested in him. They need to figure out what he is. And they want to put him in a position to succeed. Whereas Renfro is a veteran. I think they have more they're more comfortable. And we know what he is. We can hit him in the sixth spot. And he's going to do his thing. He'll hit 220, 230.
Yep.
He'll hit those home runs like he hit today. I think he hit one yesterday. Like, he's going to hit, 30 to 35 home runs and hit 220, 230. Good he team. Is what he is. Dahlbeck, we don't know yet. Dahlbeck, if he can figure it out, has a higher ceiling than Renfro.
I mean, Dahlbeck hitting ninth is like the pitcher coming in as a middle reliever before you move into the back of the bullpen or a starting role, like, which doesn't really happen anymore, but
right.
It's kind of the same thing, right?
Like when you bring, like, David Price, how they brought him up in the bullpen, he pitched that first 2 year and a bit, and then they, slowly transitioned into starter.
Yep.
This is the Rays, not the Red Sox.
Right, of course. Yep.
But I think that's the interesting, and I think that once Cordero is up, though, it's pretty obvious that Chavis is going down. Like, that's,
Yeah, like, and it's...
Arroyo's played well. You're not going to lose him for nothing.
Right. Arroyo played well enough that they are not going to expose him to waivers. And it was kind of funny because it's like, when they signed Danny Santana, I think we were all of the mind that, like, oh, there goes Arroyo. They're going to try and sneak him through. But now, like, Santana, meanwhile, like, someone on Twitter joked that he had gout, but he basically had like an infection in his foot and he was in the hospital on IV fluids for days.
I mean,
which is that's incredible.
As someone who has had an infection in their foot that has caused them to go to the hospital, not fun, not something really to joke about.
I'm just saying, like, fair.
My point is, like, if he's in the hospital,
it's serious.
I have a feeling it might have been similar to what I had, then it was probably pretty serious.
Yeah, probably. So, but I mean, he's in the hospital getting, IV, probably antibiotics, fighting that off.
Yeah.
no question he's not breaking camp with the team right now.
Yeah.
Was discussing this with one of the beat writers. It will be interesting to see what happens with, he's got a retention bonus if he's not on the major league roster. They basically, as I've mentioned on here, gave him the, you know, 6-year veteran minor league deal, even though he's only a 5-year veteran. He's got a, I think $100,000. I think I almost said $100 million. I think I did that last episode. $100,000 retention bonus that gets paid if he's not on the major league roster on opening day. I wonder if they're going to kind of try and renegotiate that because he's also got an opt-out. We don't know when it is. I would guess it's a June 1 opt-out, but you know, if it's an earlier opt-out, I wonder if they're kind of like, look, well, you know, maybe we'll bump up your base pay, but like, we don't really, you know, you're not on the major league roster because of the fact that you haven't played. You know, you've been hurt.
And well, he didn't have a spring training, so I think they bought themselves at least a month, maybe two, with him.
The alternate site will be his spring training.
Exactly, and then you want to see him in some games, so he probably starts in Pawtucket. Like, I don't think he's a consideration, really, until we get to May.
No, for sure, for sure. And you know, Chavis and Arroyo, they've played well enough to make the roster. I don't know how you mix them in. I mean,
It's a weird situation because it was obvious with Franchi, because Franchi, you just sit him against tough lefties and throw Chavis or Arroyo at second base, move Hernandez to the outfield. But with Marvin Gonzalez switch hitting, you don't really need to do that. And so,
Well, it just depends on where they're comfortable playing Marwin Gonzalez, though, because the primary shortstop this spring with Bogaerts hurt, I tweeted about this, has been Christian Arroyo, which is really interesting.
He's not looks great. Let's be honest. I've watched a lot and talked to people down there, and like, he's fine, but he's not someone scouts I've talked to said they'd feel comfortable putting out there for an extended absence.
Right.
I think it is interesting too. We'll probably get into these guys in a second, but one of the guys who's gotten a ton of run this spring, he's in the top 10 for most at bats, is Jonathan Arauz. I can't pronounce his name. How do you pronounce it?
Arauz.
And he's gotten a ton of run this spring, and I think that is because they needed to see, like, is he someone, if we have to put someone at shortstop for an extended time, can he come up and play some role? They played Hernandez at shortstop some too, so.
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, the innings coming into today's game, because I don't have those up, but, I mean, Arauz has played 27 innings at short, but 62 at second. So I don't know if they just see him more as a second baseman. I don't know. Arroyo has played 44 innings at shortstop. That leads the team. Bogaerts is now up to 23 because he's been playing more and playing catch-up. Jeter Downs had 31 at short. Kike Hernandez only has 19. He's got 34 at second, 14 in center. He hasn't played a corner. Who else has played short? Yairo Munoz got 3 innings at short. And then Chad De La Guerra's got 14 at short. So Arroyo's been the primary shortstop.
Marwin Gonzalez, did you say him? Marwin Gonzalez has 11 at shortstop. 11, too.
Sorry. Yeah, I missed him. Yep. But he's also played first, second, and left. And I think he's been, and it's 7 innings in right. I think they've been playing him a lot left lately because it looks like that's where he's going to be on opening day.
Yeah.
So, you know, is Marwin Gonzalez a shortstop at this point? I mean, from what I've heard, I admittedly haven't seen a lot of him, but from what I've heard, that's not really a thing either at this point.
No, it seems like I think they would mix and match, but I just thought it was interesting how much Arauz has played, and he's actually performed pretty well, which is a good sign for their depth, which I think you want to transition and just talk about, like, kind of the depth options.
Yeah, well, it made me wonder if there was a Sorry.
The Jaren Duran discussion, let's be honest. That's
okay,
what it
fair.
Is.
Yeah, I mean, with Arauz, the thing with him is that I wondered if he might beat out Chavis for that last bench spot because of the fact that Bogaerts was kind of coming off the shoulder injury. But I think Bogaerts has more or less shown that he's ready to go at this point.
Agree.
But if he was a little bit more of a question on defense, I think that they might have given a little more thought to having Arauz on the bench as the primary backup shortstop.
Agree. And I do think, though, he's going to play it. At first I was like, send him to double A and kind of just see what he can do. But I don't think you can, in the sense that he's one of two. Once Chavis goes down, him and Chavis are the only guys, non-catcher position players on the 40-man that have a realistic chance of playing. Like, I'm not counting like Marcus Wilson, for example, and Jason Rosario, guys like that. So they're the only guys that really I think they'd feel comfortable calling up. So I think he kind of has to go to Worcester now and once the minor league season starts and be ready for a call up, which is interesting because I'm not sure they would have expected that, you know, when they drafted him, but he clearly has played well since they rule 5'd him.
Yeah, but definitely. definitely.
And piggybacking that, though, it moves into the discussion that I kind of wanted to have with this is Jaren Duran has played a ton, and they don't have another outfielder on the 40-man that they can call up, like a true outfielder.
Well, it depends what you need, because I think, you know, Yairo Munoz, they call an outfielder now, or he's been listed
as
an outfielder.
Though.
No, I know, but I'm just saying it depends. Like, neither is Duran.
Though that's, yeah, that's the thing.
Like, if you're going to add, if they need to add a guy for, I mean, look, Franchi Cordero goes down, they're playing Marwin Gonzalez and left. I'm sure if one more person went down, Kike Hernandez would become an outfielder full-time, and you would be starting Arroyo or Chavis or some combination thereof. I think probably the backup outfielders are the two utility guys right now. And then when he's ready, maybe Danny Santana. But, you know, you've got the guys that we have projected for the alternate site in the outfield are Franchi Cordero as on a rehab assignment, Jaren Duran, Michael Geddes, Yairo Munoz, and Cesar Pueyo. You know, Pueyo is usable depth. Munoz is usable depth. You don't necessarily want to use them and then immediately lose them, but it depends what you need. I think, honestly, I think they're hoping Duran is ready mid-year.
I agree.
The way they have structured this outfield, it's just, we said it when they got Renfro. I'm cool with it if their plan is not to have him get 600 plate appearances.
Because right now, it definitely looks like the plan is for him to get 600 plate appearances.
No question.
Like, as of now.
No question whatsoever. Same with Franchi Cordero.
Yeah.
I like the outfield a lot better with one more guy. That's why it wasn't like, it was more of a, they weren't a money fit for Jackie Bradley and a long-term fit for Jackie Bradley. But they weren't a, we have a full outfield not fit for Jackie Bradley.
Well, no,
they easily could have played him.
If you can slot Duran in center eventually, mm-hmm. it just makes so much more sense. Because Renfro, they're all lefties, but Renfro can, you know, Renfro and Hernandez can both play the outfield against against really tough lefties. Mm-hmm. One of them can cycle in, you know, on certain days when you want to give another guy, one of the outfielders a day off. Like, the roster makes a lot of sense with that as your four main outfielders.
Yeah.
Because I'm not counting JD Martinez as playing outfield because I don't assume he'll play very much outfield.
Right.
But
he's played a little bit in camp, I think. But he's played.
But with Duran, I think we talked, you and I were. Huh. And
he's played 30.
Talked about a lot.
He's played 37 innings and left, apparently.
That's actually a lot. Wow. That's more than I thought.
Huh.
We talked about it a lot on the podcast and on Twitter and stuff that I don't think that the offense is what's going to hold Duran back from coming up and seizing a role with the major league team. It's going to come down to his defensive mm-hmm. progression. And we've seen in spring training, he's had some really bad reads in the outfield and center field. And that's the issue with him. He's just not an instinctual outfielder. And I understand he's super, he's really fast. He's a 70 runner and that can cover for some errors, but at the same time, you know, you just can't, when you're playing center field at Fenway Park, especially,
yeah,
it's probably
exactly.
one of the tougher center fielders, one of the tougher center fields in baseball. You just can't mess that up because if you misplay a ball in center field in Fenway, it's an inside the park home run or a triple every time.
If it's in the triangle,
and,
for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And he's going to have to cover a lot of ground and his speed can do that. But if you don't read it off the bat, the speed might not matter in that situation. That's the thing I think Red Sox fans and, I mean, I'm definitely a part of this too. We kind of took Jackie Bradley for granted in center field.
Well, we've had a pretty good run of center fielders generally.
Yeah, well, that's true. But Bradley made plays that were very difficult, look routine. Mm-hmm. And that's because his instincts were off the charts. You know, as soon as the ball made contact, he was sprinting the right direction every time. He knew exactly where he was going. He got to that spot and he would just stand there. And that's a play that for most outfielders would be a tough one, but he just made it look routine. And that's something that Duran is just that first read off the bat is just not instinctual for him yet. You know, he takes that false step in on a ball over his head or he goes back on a ball that he has to charge. And sometimes his speed makes up for it. Sometimes it doesn't. And that's the thing that he needs to work on the most in order to get up to be a major league quality outfielder or a major league quality player, frankly, is that the defense is what he needs to develop because he's got I've been very impressed with him at the plate this spring. He's driving the ball still, which is what we wanted to see. The strikeouts are up a little higher than I would like, and he's not really taking walks, but I'm going to give some youthful exuberance there. You know, he's kind of just going up there to hit, which is spring training, fine.
Right.
But the defense is what needs to work on, and I'm sure that's what the Red Sox are going to be prioritizing at the ATS with him, is just every day hitting him fungos and working on showing him video to work on his defensive positioning, his reads, his first step, things like that, because that's what's going to make the difference between whether I think you see him up with the Red Sox in, you know, June or if it's not until September.
I mean, Billy McMillan's the AAA manager, right? I mean, that's a former outfielder right there. So The thing is, too, and it's, you know, I've seen, well, why don't you just play him in left at Fenway? First of all, he can be a center fielder. This isn't, he's a defensive liability and always will be, right? That's not what we're saying. We're saying he needs to work on it and can be good. I mean, if he turned into a center fielder with above average range, would you be surprised? I wouldn't.
If he turned into like a 55 center fielder, I wouldn't be surprised. Right now, he's not that. Right now, he's a 40. But
right. And
well, the thing is, too, I understand the left field thing, but it's such a waste.
Exactly.
You don't want guys with his athleticism in left field. There's just no point. Mm-hmm. And with him in left field, too, it puts more pressure on the bat. And, you know, it's a different profile again. You know, in center field, what he now can do with this new swing and everything, plus if he can turn into a 50, 55 defender, that's a potential everyday player. In left field, the bat still might be light. You know, we don't know exactly how that's going to translate if it was in a corner outfield run producing position. And if you're playing, if he's not good enough defensively for center, you're looking at like a fringy left fielder. That's a different profile. That's a different guy entirely. So that's why you don't just stick him in left. You know, you want to see him seize the center field role. That's what the ideal outcome would be for the Red Sox.
Yeah, he goes to AAA in Worcester, becomes a legit, no kidding, MLB center fielder.
Yeah,
forces you to call him up mid-year, say July. Yeah. And then they've got the roster that they can accommodate that. No question.
Well, exactly. And by that time, hopefully, they're in a situation where maybe they don't need to carry 14 pitchers, so there's a spot for him or something like that happens that kind of balances the roster more.
Right, for sure. All right, shall we get to emails, Ian, or is there any more that we need to talk about on the roster? I kind of ran it down.
No, I think we're good. Did we talk about them losing Joel Piamps again? I think
we did.
Did we talk about that in the last episode?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think we're good then.
All right. Well, we want to get to your emails now. As we always say, we want to talk about what you all want to hear about. It's podcast@soxprospects.com. Not info. It's podcast@soxprospects.com. We've got a couple emails from Brian to start off. Ian, his first one says, "Hi, guys. There don't seem to be as many questions on the position player side of the ball compared to pitching in terms of who's going to make the club. However, I see that you have Christian Arroyo making the team as one of three players on an ultra-versatile Swiss Army bench." He threw a trademark on there like he filed for a trademark. You didn't, Brian. I'm a lawyer. I know that you didn't. He says, "I hope you're not right."
Well, isn't Swiss Army trademarked?
Yeah, I don't think that's what he meant, but fair.
I think it's what he meant. Yeah. I'm going to give our readers / listeners the benefit of the doubt because they're
fine.
Very smart.
Fine, Brian. Ian's taking your side. Anyway, he says, "I hope you're not right. I don't see what the ceiling is for Arroyo. He's not a great shortstop or fielder in general, and he hasn't hit much in 300-plus plate appearances in the majors, a 283 OBP. To me, he's Michael Chavis 2.0. Assuming he's healthy, I'd much rather see Danny Santana take that spot. And to be fair, he sent this email 2 weeks ago. He's a veteran who can play both on the grass and the dirt, and he's had recent big league success, more recent than Marwin Gonzalez, .. Arroyo's out of options, but is that really a problem? The long-term backup at shortstop in the event of a tragedy befalling Xander Bogaerts is Jonathan Arreus, not Arroyo, which is why Arreus needs to play every day in Worcester. Arreus. I got to practice that. Lots of guys already on the roster can play second base or third base. I don't see why Arroyo needs a 40-man spot, and I wonder if he would even be claimed if let go. Is there something that I'm missing about him? Thanks for entertaining this topic and keep up the great work. Brian in Nevada." Again, this is from 2 weeks ago before Arroyo really got hot, Ian, and was hitting very well, and I think he's showing why.
Yeah.
You know, he's showing why he has value.
But yeah, I mean, Arroyo was someone who I know it was never with the Red Sox, but coming up, he was a legit prospect.
He was a top 100 guy.
He was a top 100 prospect, and people were really confident in his hit tool. And obviously, you know, it hasn't worked out to this point, but I think the Red Sox just think that there's something still there. You know, they Chaim Bloom has experience because he was in Tampa when Bloom was there. I think they've made some adjustments with him at the plate, and you know, this spring he's looked, I think he's definitely had his struggles, but he's been a little streaky. But I mean, his overall numbers are pretty good. You know, he's hitting 279, 326, 512 with 3 home runs, 9 strikeouts and 46 PAs, which is, that's fine. You know, that's, what is that, like a 18% strikeout rate or something? 19%, 20% was close. So yeah, he's someone who can put the ball in play. They like his defensive versatility, and he's someone who I'm pretty confident and this is an informed opinion, would get claimed almost immediately if he was put on waivers. So I think that they're in a situation where they don't want to lose someone like him for nothing. And it's a lot easier. This is the other thing. It's a lot easier to sneak a guy through waivers once the regular season starts than it is right now.
Yep.
Cause once teams set their rosters like a week in, they're hesitant to want to change things up that quickly. So if you do want to try and sneak him through, the time would not be now. It would be in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, it's for who's going to be on the bench, right? Like we're talking about the bench right now. We're not talking about who's starting. It's like you know, kind of an Allen Iverson thing. It's not who's starting, it's who's on the bench.
Well,
he's
going to
get some run at second, but
if they were talking about him in a starting role, different discussion. Like yeah. then yeah.
Yeah,
but
I mean, if
like that we're getting into 2020 Red Sox territory with that, right, so we don't
right.
need to remember that.
Right, right. Our next email from Brian, he asks, "Hi guys, can't wait for the mailbag spectacular, although I guess if you're reading it, it's already here." And of course, he sent this before that episode came out. A few ideas about some proposed rules changes, and it reminds me we never talked about the minor league rules stuff, so remind me after this email, we'll talk about it. First, even infielders starting every play on the dirt is something I've been hoping for, much more than having two guys on each side of second base. Maybe enforce one or the other, but not both on the same play. So you can have three guys on one side of the diamond, but all have to be on the dirt. Or the second baseman can play in short right field, but the shortstop and third base have to be on the left side. So he's basically saying everyone on the dirt, no shift where, you know, the guys in the outfield. Whatever. The shift isn't the problem. I just say let guys, you know, whatever. As regards the pitch clock, I have another compromise that can speed up the game while preserving the romantic notion that there are no clocks in baseball, something I have always appreciated. No pitch clock in the stadium, but after each game, a replay intern times each pitcher's pitches. If more than half of a given pitcher's offerings are over 20 or 25 seconds, whatever the limit they want to establish, he's suspended for a game. Second offense, two games, etc., will be an incentive not only for the pitcher to work faster, but also for coaches to coach them to work faster. No, I'm not suspending a guy for taking too long.
I mean, and the Players Association would never allow that.
That's
so
not happening. No.
Good luck.
Yeah. Why is this better than having a pitch clock for the simple reason that if there's a clock, it would become the focus of the fans? No, I don't agree. One more idea he has is for replay. Stopping a game for 5 minutes to watch endless frame-by-frame replays is an awful side effect of the rule. What's worse is those plays where guys are called out because they lose contact with the base for a hundredth of a second during their slide after they've beaten the throw. Replay wasn't instituted to split hairs. It was instituted to right obvious wrongs. I would propose that all replay reviews be shown at normal speed, which is all that's needed to catch the egregiously bad calls that spawn a replay review. You can see, if you can't see an obvious mistake in normal speed replay, then give the ump the benefit of the doubt. Getting an answer on a close play in 30 seconds is better than taking 5 minutes. I see that. I mean, to me, the obvious answer is you just have a replay ump.
Yeah,
he just calls down and says, "Hey, you screwed that one up."
That's the thing I would like to see is just have the ump at home plate wear an earpiece, and you know, if there's a close play and they want to have it checked, you know, they tap their wrist or something, and the guy up in the box or in wherever checks it, or this is what you said, he calls down and says, "Hey, this is wrong. Let's fix it." Like, I don't understand why, and this applies to a lot of sports, why they have to have the refs go over to a monitor or go to an earpiece and do it that way. Like,
it's silly.
There's got to be better technology, but yeah.
Or you just have like a red hat, you know, in football, you have the red hat, who's the guy with the earpiece up to the TV booth.
Yeah, who steps onto the field who's on the field during the timeouts and then steps off. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Brian's last email, this is more recent. He says, "Since my last email lobbying for Danny Santana to make the club ahead of Christian Arroyo has gone off at the plate. And while Grapefruit League performance doesn't mean much, it means enough for a guy who's out of options if he has a big spring. Also, it doesn't hurt that Arroyo has his history with AC. AC. Alex Cora. He does? Am I missing something? Does he mean Chaim Bloom? Anyway.
Yeah,
my question regarding that situation is, does Santana have any opt-outs in his minor league contract? My guess is that he does. It was reported that he does. Also, yes. With Brazier looking like he's opening the season on the IL, pitching lesson that can never be learned enough is you never have enough pitching. Just acquire as many arms as you can, and guys will weed themselves out, whether due to injury or poor performance. It looks like Bryce will be the 14th pitcher until Brazier is ready, by which time other injuries and other performance may free more spots." We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Bryce isn't the last guy. It's he was going to make the roster. It's Brewer and Valdez. Looking forward to April 1st while hoping that Florida's laissez-faire COVID policies don't throw a spanner in the works. All right. Thanks, Brian. Our next email, Ian, comes from...
Did you want to talk about the minor league rule changes?
Oh, right. Yeah. So Major League Baseball announced that it's going to be testing new rules in the minors this year. In addition, minor leagues already have a pitch clock. And actually, I find that talking to guys, most guys like it, actually, having the pitch clock, even the pitchers.
I love the pitch clock. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it makes the game go by so much faster.
Yeah. But they've announced some interesting rule changes. So some of the rules that they're testing out, Ian, some of these are kind of interesting. I'm interested in your thoughts. In AAA, the sizes of each base will be increased from 15 to 18-inch squares. The idea being that they want guys to steal more bases.
I also think it will reduce collisions, which I'm very pro, guys not getting hurt. So I'm all in favor of this.
Because they're never going to be able to get away with the like double base that they have in youth baseball. Like that's just never going to happen.
No, they have it in softball too.
Yeah.
It would be good, but it would never happen. Like the traditionalists would like,
even the players would revolt, which is fair.
I'm fine. Just make them a little, like, I don't understand why the bases have to be the size they're set. Like, obviously you can't make them like 20 feet wide, but 3-inch difference, no one's going to notice.
Well, and the thing is, it's like on the base path that's 6 inches, right? So
yeah. Yeah.
It'll be, I'm interested to see if that changes anything. If we see like more stolen bases in AAA this year or something. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely.
Defensive positioning in AA, teams will be required to position 4 players in the infield. Each player must have both feet in front of the outer boundary of the outfield dirt. In the second half of the season, MLB may also require that teams keep 2 infielders on each side of the base, although that's not a requirement at the outset. So basically, they're just going to test exactly what Brian was saying.
I don't hate the dirt rule. I don't like the no shifting with 3 guys on the one side. Like,
yeah,
I still maintain that if a team's shifting you, learn to hit the other way or just bunt.
Well, I don't think it's that easy though. Like,
but I think just bunt then, just punish them. Like Anthony Rizzo, guys like that have taught themselves to be good bunters in order to stop teams from shifting as much. Like, it can be done. I just think that, like, I don't know. I don't know why we want to limit. You know, if you're a one trick pony at the plate, then you should be punished for that. You know, you shouldn't be able to have, like, the defense should be able to adjust to that. I just don't like the idea of forcing like teams that do good advanced work and good scouting information on players to be punished because they, you know, position their defenses a certain way.
Well, and it's what's wrong. Why is the shift bad? Because I find the people that don't like the shift, it's like, oh, the shift, it's terrible. It's like, well, what's wrong with it?
Like, I don't have an issue with this either, but, like, I would be more open to the all on the infield dirt, because I do think it's a little funny when, like, a guy hits a rope to right field and the second baseman is playing, you know, at where the normal right fielder would play and just throws him out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a little more wonky to me than just having 3 guys on one side.
But it's also just, like, if you're saying the problem with games is they're too long, I mean, the real problem is pace of play, but for the folks who say the game is too long, like, the shift makes games shorter. Like, you realize this, right? Like, more outs means the game is shorter.
Well, and that's the thing, that the pitching situation, the pace of play, the way to do it is how the minor leagues do it, is because they're never going to get rid of commercials. That would be the number one way to get rid of pace of play, is to have innings turnover as quickly as they do in the minors when there's no TV commercials. But that's never going to happen. We know that. So it is the pitch clock. That is the way in order to speed the game up, because minor league games have it. I don't like, a lot of pitchers don't seem to have many issues with it.
No.
And it, as a fan, you don't even notice it. I understand he was saying that, you know, you don't notice it. It's like the only locations it is behind home plate, where only the pitcher can see it, and one in center field. Like, I would rather that as a way to speed up the game.
Yeah. It's not on like the main scoreboard.
No, exactly.
Yeah. This is an interesting one, Ian. High A, pitchers will be required to disengage the rubber before attempting a pickoff throw, because they don't want guys to step off. And I thought that there was... Oh, and then across low A, pitchers will only be allowed to step off twice per plate appearance.
Well, it's not that, though. It's if they step off a third time, they have to get the runner out or it's a balk. Right. So they still can. So it's not like the,
you just,
you know, the runner
get them.
Yeah, it's not like the runner can go halfway to second base and the pitcher can't throw over.
You can't do
anything
about it, right.
I don't really understand the point of this.
I mean, they're trying to keep it from... They're trying to prevent Clay Buchholz 2.0.
Well, yeah, they're trying to stop it from the situation where the fans start booing and they're complaining because the pitcher throws over 12 times. I understand that, but...
2 is too few.
Yeah.
And the disengaging the rubber, like,
That's going to I do not think that's going to go well, because if you're fast at all and the pitcher has to fully step off before throwing over, they're going to get massive jumps every time.
Well, and the other thing,
basically stops you from the lift the leg, throw over move. And,
well, and the thing is, too, is people don't realize this. Like, if you step, if you throw over and you're on the rubber for the pickoff move, it's and it go, ball goes out of play, it's one base.
Yeah, it's two bases.
It is two bases if you disengage. Now, in Major League Baseball with stadiums, that's like not as much of a problem as like high school baseball.
No, I feel like,
right?
I was about to say that was a problem in high school where there was no fence behind first base.
Right, right. So it's not as big of a deal, right? But I, so I guess that's not really a problem. But it's just, I don't know. I don't see the point. Low A Southeast League, which is basically the old Florida State League, yet, select games will have the electronic stripes at strike zone. Is what it is. We've talked about it.
Yeah, no electronic strike zone.
We'll see.
I go back and forth on it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it's a little wonky that you have, I don't know, it's this kind of like random idea of, and apparently they're going to do it based on how tall a guy is.
That's good, because it would be stupid if a guy could just crouch and have no strike zone. Yeah. Like,
and I think they're going to, like, I think that they, it's something to do with like a percentage of your height. I don't know. It's, it, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That's been discussed. Pitch timer in the low A West League on a 15-second pitch clock, which is 5 seconds faster than the clock currently used in double and triple A.
Fine with that.
Seems a little aggressive, but we'll see. And I talked about the pickoff limits. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And, but the thing is, this is what baseball should be doing. They need to be trying new stuff out to, you know, because they do have an engagement problem. You know, they're having trouble bringing new fans in. Mm-hmm. They have fans going away because the game takes too long. The average pace of game is increasing, like, it's like 10 minutes in the last 10 years or something. Like, they need to find a way to get the game, you know, shorter. And I think the other thing we should talk about also is the report that came out today that they're going to start actually checking for people doctoring the, for pitchers doctoring the baseball.
Oh, yeah. They're going to use like Statcast data, like spin rates.
Yeah. But they're also going to have compliance officers like taking baseballs out mid game and like checking guys for stuff. And this is a dangerous path because, I mean, even watching spring training games, you can see pitchers on both teams, and there's a ton of them with the stuff right in the middle of their hat, you know, right where they put their fingers. And after every pitch, they go to their hat. Like, guys have that. They have it, you know, inside their belt buckle, like things like that. And pitchers do this all the time, and it's not just one team. Like, almost every team has pitchers who do this. And if they start enforcing this, this could get ugly. And I'm like, the Players Association, I do not think is going to like this at all.
No, and I think the really obvious solution is MLB regulates what they use so that it's just a grip thing for a lot of guys. Well, it's not just necessarily gimmicking spin rate.
Well, that's the thing, and I don't know who said it. I might have been Evan Drellick or someone reported that MLB is also, along with this, has basically like said that they will be working with the players to make a better than the, you know, the clay they rub all the balls down with before the game. They're going to make a more stickier, tactile solution to use to get better grip on the ball.
That makes sense.
But still, it's just going to be interesting to see, given how much the war of words between pitchers regarding like spin rate and certain teams being accused of cheating and stuff. It's going to be fascinating to watch how this is enforced this year.
Hello, Trevor Bauer. Yeah, we'll see. Our next email comes from San Diego Boto's enthusiast. He says, there's multiple questions. I'll read the first two. Question one, do you, Chris and Ian, ever talk amongst yourselves that while the Red Sox system is rated where it is, middle of the pack or lower, that it is ideally suited for producing a near-term quality team that might give it more value, not in a vacuum? What I mean to say is that from at least the position player standpoint, the Red Sox seem to have holes at first, second, and center, and the top-ranked position prospect guys, at least nationally, are Dahlbeck, Downs, Duran, and Casas. If Heim Bloom is looking to build without really sacrificing the product on the field, it seems like the system isn't as it is, ain't that bad. I mean, yes and no. I mean, we've talked about, I mean, those guys are all either top 100 or like top 100 adjacent guys, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Prospect rankings are based on potential superstars, and the Red Sox don't really have that. I think Casas could be a potential superstar.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they just don't have that high-end players. And I also don't think they have many of the low-end, like, super high-ceiling, low-floor guys either. I think that's kind of, like, the two groups they're missing right now.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, the prospect lists are superstars is how it is. And I don't think that's a deliberate, like, attempt by them either. It's just that's kind of how it's worked out. with how the system, because, you know, if you ask them, would you rather have, you know, one guy at the three positions you need, like ranked where they had, or just three superstars at the same position, they're going to take the three superstars at the same position, or three above, you know,
because then you can deal them
the same position. So
you either move them, for example, Mookie Betts coming up as a second baseman and they had one.
Well, exactly.
You know, or you know,
just trade them.
You just trade.
Do what the Padres do. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the Red Sox system is good, as he said, but and I do think it's going to provide them with value over the next year plus. But I still mm-hmm. think if they had their, you know, if you ask them, they would much rather have like multiple superstar prospects.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Question two is, Ian, who is your Premier League team? You can't live in England and try and stay on the sidelines. It's just not possible.
Oh, Man City. And I'm Manchester City. I have been my entire life, been to games since the 90s before they were good. I've seen them when they were in the third division back then at Main Road. So yeah, now I've been a City fan, and my whole family is too. So I was raised that way.
All right. Our next question comes from Al Mendel, Patreon supporter. He says, any update on Noah Song? Is he expected to report to minor league camp in a few weeks? When can we realistically expect him to see him pitch in his first real major MILB game? First of all, Song did pitch in MILB games in 2019. So, yeah. As we've talked about previously, he's not expected to pitch this year. He's at flight school.
No. And the last thing we know is that he was flying a plane, which is kind of sweet.
He had just started flight. So he is at...
He started flight training.
School. So, yes, he started flight training like a week,
correct.
A couple weeks ago.
But school has been going on for a while. He just started the training in-air portion.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we'll hear anything until next offseason. And as I think we've talked about, I think there's an odds of a chance he never plays baseball again. I mean, you can't rule that out. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, he's someone who's committed to his service.
Yep.
And if he chooses to go that route, then that's awesome.
Good for him.
You know, that's his choice.
So, do what you love.
I think it's just one of those things we'll find out. You know, it'll be asked a lot, I'm sure, but the odds of getting any update are going to be very slim until probably next offseason.
Al sent another email. He says, I'm looking at the Sox prospects projected rosters for 2022. And just for context here, before we go on with the email, we have our 2021 projected rosters, and then we have a page that's really more for fun, to be very clear, that has like the 4 years after that. That's only if the Red Sox matriculated up their own guys and didn't acquire anyone. So this is in no way a serious projection of what the roster will be. It's just kind of a thing for fun. But anyways, he says, wow, do we appear to have a complete 2022 lineup of position players already? Plus, they could even have the AAA depth to fill most potential holes caused by injuries. Jason Rosario, Hudson Potts. He lists Arroyo there. Arroyo wouldn't be in AAA. Marcus Wilson, Jonathan Arauz, Connor Wong, and Yairo Munoz. It appears possible that the Red Sox will not need to sign a single significant position player next. He says this offseason. I think he means like next offseason. Do you agree that barring a major injury that we appear pretty well set for position players in 2022? Sox prospects team has been a big part of what makes being a Red Sox fan so enjoyable for me. So please keep up the great work. Thanks for the kind words, Al, and thank you for your support, of course. Ian, it's only a year from now, but it's so far off. I mean, we project, like, for example, like we have Tristan Casas as the first baseman in 2022. I mean, that could still be Dahlbeck. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that said, I think there's a good point to be made from a couple of the previous emails here that, like, the holes they're projected to have can be filled internally. When you look at a
Definitely,
Jeter Downs at second, when you look at a Jaron Duran in center.
Oh, I agree. But at the same time, I think you want to go out and get free agents because you want to be able to move those guys for other players you need. Or you want to put yourself in a situation where you can basically, you can augment your team. You know, you can't count on those guys to all be ready at that point to be superstar players or to be above average players. You know, it might take some time. And so that's why, you know, you want to be ready to be able to go out and spend that money on those two, three significant free agents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, who knows if that's how it'll work. I think, you know, who knows if Casas will be ready in 2022. You know, who knows if you have major injuries. Guys play better, play worse. There's a lot that could happen. Do they trade Christian Vasquez if they're, you know, out of it at the deadline? Who knows? there's a lot going on there, but it's an interesting thing to look at. It's fun. But yeah, thanks for the emails, Al. Our next question, Ian, comes from, oh, we have another Al Mendel question. Al says, does Danny Santana have any options left? Sox Prospect site is the only place I've ever seen able to answer that question for a player. Thank you, Sox Prospects. There must be a way to find that answer when we don't list it. I promise that I always check SP first, but please let me know what other sites publish options info. The answer is Fangraphs, by the way. Fangraphs has it on player pages. But I don't believe Danny Santana has options, but he's on a minor league deal, and he's not on the 40-man roster. So he will start the year in the minors. And he can stay down there until his opt-out. But
right.
They're not going to option Danny Santana. If they're going to add him to the roster, they're going to keep him up. And he definitely doesn't have options left. I don't even know why I'm putting it that way.
But, well, and it's also, even if he did, that's the type of guy that if he's not going to come up, you just release him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's not going to spend the year in AAA. You let him go find another team as a favor. You know, that's one of those situations.
Right. Our next podcast question is in an email titled Podcast Question, and it's from Mark. And Mark says, it's long past time that we had some new Cutter Crawford news, ... He doesn't ask it, but I think he's asking us for the Cutter Crawford news, Ian. At least that's how I
interpret. Rehabbing from Tommy John surgery.
Yep. He had Tommy John before in 2019, I think, right? End of 2019.
Yeah,
so he would have missed last year anyway.
He was at Instructs.
Didn't pitch, though.
Didn't pitch. And I would assume that we'll start hearing some stuff when the minor league, we'll see if he's on the minor league camp roster. I assume he will be on that, and then we'll kind of go from there.
I presume he'll be there. It's just whether or not he's going to be pitching, right?
Exactly.
It's the question is, will he be on the mound throwing? But I presume at this point that he will come back as a reliever. I would be very surprised if he's starting.
I would agree.
Given the double A rotation is probably going to be what? It's Ward, German, Winkowski,
Politi,
Danny Reyes, and there's one
guys
more
like
guy.
That. Chase Shugart is the other one we have listed, Shugart, but I think he's a reliever. So
And I can also see them starting him in high A. Next question. Hey, it's Brian again. He says, guys, question for Ian, and feel free to look at as many prospect websites as you like before answering. Who would you like to realistically see as the players to be named later coming from the Sox in the Benintendi, Franchi, Winkowski trade, two from Kansas City, one from the Mets, and the says the Ottavito German trade. I don't think that there's a player named later.
There's no player to be named later in that.
And the CJ Trout trade. No, there's not. I don't know where he got that
there's
from.
There's not?
No. They got two guys for nothing. They got two guys for cash. And the CJ Chatham trade.
I mean,
they're not going to get anything for Chatham. That's
did he
not
say realistically or not?
He said realistically, yeah.
Okay, so I can't say like Bobby Witt. I have not honestly done a deep enough dive.
Yeah, we'll save this one and maybe look at it in the future.
I think that's something we kind of need to see the start of the season, and we'll go from there.
Al has another email, and he says, I've become a real fan of Garrett Whitlock this spring. I usually try not to get too excited about spring training performances, but Whitlock has impressed both on and off the field. We didn't talk about him. We should have. And is clearly fully recovered from Tommy John. He could be extremely valuable for the Red Sox this year in a long relief / swingman role, and I could see him being in the discussion for a starting job in 2022 with a strong season. Are you both jumping on the Whitlock bandwagon too? Will he be moving up the SP60 rankings when you update them for April, or should I temper my excitement? Great, keep up the great work, guys. Thank you, Al Mendel. Great questions, Al. Yes, he's going to be moving up. Just to throw this out there as kind of a point of information, we are going to do a rankings update at the end of the month. It's not going to be our official season opening ranking. We're going to save that because we're going to get reports, hopefully, from minor league camp, and we will use that to move around more guys. There are a few guys who will move. For example, Brian Mott is going to move down because of the UCL injury. Whitlock will move up. Araúz will probably move up. You know, there's a few guys who will move. I mean, there will some guys move up. Bizardo probably moves up. Politi might move up too. But at any rate, Whitlock is going to move up probably a significant amount. He's, what, 31 right now or something, Ian?
He'll be in the 32. Top 20.
The top 20, he'll be, like, on the cusp at worst. He's in my top 20. Yeah.
He's in my top 20. He's been excellent. I mean, he's been, you know, his
long
last
levers.
Outing, he was 95 to 97 with, like, a plus changeup, which was supposedly his third pitch. which goes back to the Red Sox ability to develop change ups the last year plus has been very interesting.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of guys have progressed, made great progression with that pitch. And he was throwing a nasty changeup. His breaking ball was like a good average ish, you know, show me offering. And yeah, I think he's someone who this year they'll stretch out in kind of a hybrid, as we talked about earlier, like long relief
bulk
bullpen role. But I think next year you try him out in the rotation
coming
into camp, you know, because he's got that size. I've been told his extension numbers are excellent. Like,
well, he's so well long. He's just all and so, arms and legs.
Exactly. And so the ball really jumps on hitters. And when you're throwing 95 to 97 with, you know, plus extension from a 6'5" frame with a changeup that was flashing plus and, you know, a average to better slider, that's a guy you got to try in a rotation. So it seems like the Red Sox found someone here who's a very significant prospect, and I'm really interested to see how he pitches this season against, you know, major league hitters. And it's funny that even if he wasn't a Rule 5 pick, I don't see how he wouldn't have made the opening day roster anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, with the way he's pitching. Well,
I mean, the reason he doesn't is if you want him to start in AAA.
I guess so.
Because you have a full major league rotation.
Yeah, but the way he's pitched, like, he's earned a major league roster spot in some capacity.
It's going to be very different than when Araúz was on the roster.
Yeah.
Because Araúz, they were stashing. Whitlock exactly. will contribute.
Yes. I scouts down there have been blown away by him, and he's been the first guy they want to talk about.
How
and
do you not protect that guy? I mean, the Yankees had a 40-man roster crunch, well, so maybe no, they were just hoping.
It's because he's coming off Tommy John, and you just hope that no team's seen him in a year, and he can just slide through. That's why. Right, that's how. Right.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, 12 strikeouts, no walks in 9 innings. Like,
he's looked very good. I mean, I think what I bet happens is he starts 2022 in AAA starting. Because the problem, it depends on what they do, because they've got Richards and I think Perez both have club options for 2022.
Yeah.
That makes them very attractive pieces to move this year if the team is out of it. And if the team is out of contention and there are teams interested in those players because they are pitching well, they will get more in return for Richards and Perez. I could see them both being moved. If they get moved, I bet Whitlock starts major league games the second half of the year.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing you have to remember with him too is that he's going to be on an innings count this year. So
yeah, but if he's working in a relief role earlier in the year, that will keep his innings down, even in a bulk role.
The one thing I'm interested to see is if he excels in a bulk role, what do you do with him? Like, do you start pushing him later in games? Do you try to push him into like the rotation if someone's struggling? Like, I'm just fascinated to see how he gets used this year.
Depends on the rotation. Because, like, for example, if Nate Eovaldi goes down for a month, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they're necessarily calling someone up from AAA. I think you just slot one of Andreese or Whitlock into the rotation.
Yeah. I'm just interested to see how he's used this year. That's kind of the thing I'm...
I should say you potentially do that. I'm not saying they will do that.
And I think how they use him will tell us a lot about how they kind of like, because it is at the end of the day, spring training performance, you can read some into it. You can't, you know, there's still some questions. You need to see it on the field. But yeah, he's someone I'm definitely excited about. And the people I'm talking to around the game are as well.
Yep. I think that's not it. God, another. Oh, no, never mind. My email is being very slow right now, and I don't know why. And I think we've got two more. This one's from Ethan. He's got a question about Marcus Wilson. He says, why do the Red Sox not want to lose Marcus Wilson? He's way down the outfield depth chart, probably even behind Duran Munoz and Geddes, right? And we've barely seen him at the alternate training site last year and spring training this year, and he only has one more option after this season. He's not highly ranked. You guys profile him as a fringy 4th-5th outfielder. Couldn't the 40-man spot be better used elsewhere and pick up a couple pieces who aren't on the 40? Can they afford to keep him and Rosario? I think we're getting very close to the point at which there's going to be some kind of decision to be made with Wilson on the 40-man, as I kind of alluded to earlier.
Yeah, I agree.
They added him to the 40-man because he had a very good 2019, and I think part of this is just like we haven't seen these guys. When there's these minor leaguers who have to be added to the 40-man roster after the 2019 season and we didn't see them at all last year, you look and it's like, why is this guy on the 40-man? I want to see what he does this year in the alternate training site, where he'll certainly be, I would guess. Or maybe not, I guess. Maybe he won't be.
I don't think he's a lot.
Maybe he won't. I guess that's true.
I would say just when the minor league season starts.
Right. But I want to see what he does this year. He hit pretty well in 2019. Like, can he improve? What did he do over the past year? You know, we don't know what guys did at home. Yeah. You know, guys like, you know, we got reports from Fall Instructs on guys like Aldo Ramirez adding velocity. Like, Marcus Wilson could have put in some really good work in the offseason. You know, he works out with like Tarek Skubal.
He's hit well this spring. He's hitting 400, 10 ABs, and 5 strikekouts out of the 6 times he's gotten out. But I think he's someone, though, that when you look at guys who are impacted by the year off in terms of development, he's near the top of my list because he just got in that – he was in that weird group that wasn't at the ATS for the majority of it, got to the ATS, ramped up for it, and then couldn't go to Instructs because he was on the 40, man.
Yep.
And there's no fall league. So, like, he was just kind of left in no man's land, and I it's a real shame because, as you said – you know, he struggled out of the gate in 2019, got demoted, was good, got re-promoted, was better, was all right again. And, like, yeah, he's someone interesting because given the lack of outfield depth that we talked about extensively in terms of prospects. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see with him. But I don't want to cut the cord. You know, I would like to see what he can do with a full minor league season under his belt, you know, now that he's been with the Orioles for a little bit.
In the system.
Yeah, exactly. But as you said, they're getting lit, like, kind of thin on guys you can just get rid of on the 40 man, or not get rid of, but, you know, like DFA and not feel that bad about it. So,
yeah. But I think you made the great point earlier is like, is it really like that important? Pound the fist on the table that we keep Colton Brewer and Phillips Valdez, that you risk losing Marcus Wilson.
Well, exactly. Cause it's would you risk losing Marcus Wilson, or do you just risk losing one of them and know that if you need to, you just call Marcus Walden up?
Right. Or so like maybe by that point. I mean, the reason, and I, just to answer a question that closed the loop on something I mentioned earlier, Edward Bizzardo wasn't considered for the major league roster because he didn't pitch last year. Like, literally didn't pitch. You know, he wasn't at the alternate site. He was at Instructs. But like, he didn't have a season. You know, they probably want to ramp him up a little easier rather than just throwing him right in Boston. I mean, Wilson, look, he's ranked 31 in the system. It's not like he's ranked in the 60s. He's a legitimate guy to have on the 40. It's just that, yeah, we're getting close to kind of a crucible on him. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And our final question comes from our podcast Patreon supporter and friend of the show, Aaron Mehta. He says, "Hey guys, great stuff as usual. I have 2 process questions for you that I've been chewing over for a while. First, you guys often cite information to scouts you've talked to when discussing players. I'm curious how you've gotten to know these scouts, who I presume are from other teams. Is it as simple as knowing where they sit during spring training games and talking shop? Are there scouts who refuse to deal with you because they don't want to give up info from their teams? How do you even know who to talk to?" We'll stop reading there and you know, answer that question first. To some degree, we can't really... Let me put it this way. If you are at a minor league game, don't just go bother the scouts.
Yeah, don't do that.
Like, the scouts sit behind the plate.
You need to remember,
like,
that they're working.
It's not hard to figure out who the scouts are. They're the guys sitting behind the plate with the radar guns. So I don't think I'm letting it... That's not really inside baseball or, you know, a secret. You know, it's you know, you develop the relationships at games is part of it. Yeah. But it's just, you know...
It's one of these things that, you know, when you go to enough games, you're sitting there, you're taking notes yourself, you got your radar gun and some... Or you're just, you know, paying close attention. Sometimes they talk to you, sometimes they don't. And then, you know, kind of, as you said, you build a relationship from there. You know, you see the same guys more or less because coverages don't change that much. It's a lot of legwork in the sense that you've got to be boots on the ground. You know, you're not going to make those relationships without going to the games, really. That's the biggest thing, I think.
Yep. And I mean, some scouts do love to chat. You know, and it's like,
oh yeah, there are ones who love to chat. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like,
no.
I can't blame them. And this is why, because you think about what they're doing, you know, they're sitting in a car for 4 or 5 hours a day. You know, they're on the road, they're in airports, you know, they got a lot of downtime to chat. So there are, and
a friend of mine we've done this so many times today. My brain is mush. There's a friend of mine who was a scout, and he would just call me to chat. And I'm not the call, you know, just chat on the phone type. But then he'd be like, yeah, I'm driving, you know, a 6-hour drive in Omaha, like the Omaha area today. And I'm like, all right, I'm not hanging up on this poor bastard. Like,
well, that's what, like, a lot of the times I'm talking to them is like, I'll be on the road to one game and they'll be going to another game, and we'll just be, we each have a 2-hour car ride. So what else are we going to do? You know,
right.
We can, right. And listen to a podcast, or I can, you know, talk to one of my friends. Like, that's, yeah. I'm going to do that, you know?
And for what we offer information to, like, we're like, look, we're putting a lot of information out there. And you know, yeah, we've put the stories out there where we've, like, when Chris Mellon directly impacted the fact that the Red Sox traded Roman Mendez. Like,
yeah. Well, no, this is the thing, is that, like, teams, like, people in the game, they go on our website, they see the stuff. So it's, they know, they, this is also, I think, a part of it is they know who we are, and they know what we're putting out is
right,
is accurate. And they have something where they can look at it and be like, this is them. Okay, this makes sense. And I think that is also important, is, you know, to get, they're way more willing to be open when they know who you are and they know what you stand for and kind of what you're putting out. You know, they know that the stuff, we're not going out there to try and, you know, we're not going to BS people. We're going to tell it like how it is. You know, we have, and we're putting actual content out. We have the reports up, we have everything there. And so they're more open because they know what we're reporting is, they see it on the site, and they also see us at the game. So they know where we're coming from, is that we're doing the legwork also. We're not just using them to get information to put a pass along as our own.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, that's the thing, is you're not going to get information from a scout where you're just kind of like milking them for information and not offering anything. So
yeah.
The second question Aaron had was, obviously you gather a lot of info by seeing guys in person, particularly during spring training, but now that you're stuck at home, is there anything you can glean from watching on TV that's useful for getting info on guys, given the short run a lot of prospects get in games and the fact that most games aren't carried on TV? Put more broadly, when watching the game on TV, what are you guys looking at? I'll let you answer that one, Ian.
It's hard, and it's not helped that the Red Sox don't have the Statcast on at their park, so there's no MLB Game Day feed where you can get like velocities and things like that. I luckily enough, I've been able to get them for people at the games, which is nice. But when I'm watching it, it's, you can't read too much into like one at bat in a game. But, you know, you can see little things like with Gilberto Jimenez as an example. You know, he's been getting in a bat here and there in games, and you'll notice something where his swing last fall, left-handed, they kind of got him. He was staying in longer. He was trying to drive the ball, be more rotational. And you see him this spring, and it looks like he's kind of just slapping at the ball. You can kind of see setup, kind of how guys' swings look just based on, you know, a couple at-bats. And then that's when I'll go to, and I'll talk to someone who I know was at the game, or I know who's seen him a lot, and be like, hey, if I send you this video, what do you think? Or you saw him today, what did you think compared to when you saw him last year? Like, little things like that you could pick up off TV. And same with the pitchers. You can kind of, you can get a good enough, you know, you might not be able to get the velocities, but you can see, you know, oh, they're locating their fastball. You know, they've got some, they're throwing strikes with their breaking ball, things like that you can glean from the TV. So it's not an ideal look, but it's the best we can do right now. And
yeah.
It's not worthless. Like, I definitely think there is value in being able to watch the games on TV.
For sure. And I mean, sometimes it does depend on like the camera angle. Like
that is a huge part.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's JetBlue or not, but there's one park where I think it was a game that Groom pitched, and I just could not get any feel for how his pitches were moving because of the camera angle.
No.
And so that was kind of rough.
Well, and that's one thing. It's, and for example, like during the pandemic, I know I've talked to many scouts with teams who, the way they're doing their scouting is the same thing I'm doing. They're watching games on TV they're going off of that. And so that's why I think that shows there is definitely value in it. If you've got teams, because I mean, it's obviously what we have to resort to right now, but they're using that to actually file reports. And I've like seen some, you know, I know what's in these reports, and they're basing it off of, you know, I watched him this day. And so if it's good enough for teams, like, it's definitely good enough for me.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's what we can do. You make do with what you have.
Hopefully we're rounding the corner here and we'll be able to get back to the fields this year. Fingers crossed, you know,
hopefully.
But, well, yeah. And if not, we'll figure it out. You know, we'll make do with what we can and we'll go from there.
Yep. But that's it. Thank you everyone for your questions again. podcast@soxprospects.com. Ian, let's wrap it up. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the download, for your support on patreon.com/SoxProspects. Again, your emails to podcast@SoxProspects.com. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow the site @SoxProspects. Follow Ian @IanCundall. That's IanCundall. Follow me @SPChrisHatfield. Make sure you follow the site. Follow us on Twitter. We've also got Instagram now. It's @SoxProspects. So check us out there. Finally, big thank yous to Podcast Joe 2.0, who edits and produces the podcast. Thank you to the Ludlow Thieves for our intro and outro music. Find them wherever it is that you find Muzak. We'll be back at you guys soon, maybe kind of a season preview, minor league camp preview type thing. Next episode, we're thinking, we'll see. It's a moving target a little bit with this kind of weird season. We didn't mention, by the way, Ian, the minor leaguers are going to be coming in waves, apparently.
Which makes sense,
because if you think about it, they've only got room for so many guys. They're not going to have everybody there at once, which makes sense. Part of it is just COVID intake. You can't just have 150 guys come in all at once. We'll have to see how that works. Maybe we'll have a little bit more information on that next time. So keep your eyes out for what's happening there, and we'll certainly talk about it if it gets reported. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Ian. Thanks to all of you. Hey, it's almost baseball season, folks. Life is good. Take care, y'all. Be back in your eardrums soon. In the sea of angels with their hands.